Welcome to Tape 5 of the Conscious Aging Best of the Conference Collection from Sounds True. This recording features author and spiritual teacher Ram Dass on aging and the awakening potential of change. Introducing Ram Dass is the founder of the Spiritual Eldering Project, Rabbi Zalman Schachter Shalomi.
I was at first a little bit dismayed when I heard he went to India. Another good Jewish boy. He made a shift to see God in an old disreputable trickster who also was a wholly realized saint. And something happened to him. So wonderful, so deep, so precious. So he got on fire. He got all fired up and he came back. And he was chanting in a lama, Rama, Rama, Rama. It was wonderful. And one of the things that was so exquisite about how he did it was he stayed constantly focused on the service of truth. The one who started once, he used to say about himself, I'm Jewish only from my parents' side. And then he was the dream. Which parent wouldn't want to have a professor at Harvard, my son? And then all the people who, because of the way in which we had become rationalists in the West, were hungry for spirit, he brought spirit to us. Last time I saw him before now was in New Delhi. We had just come back from Dharamsala and been to see the Dalai Lama. Waiting in the hotel to go to a shul, the elevator opens up and here he is. This person, Ruvain, Ram Dass, Richard. You know what Ram Dass means? Ram Dass means the servant of Rama. He could even make a Hebrew pun, Ram Dat, the law, the religion of the Most High. But you know who the real servant is of Rama? His name is Hanuman, the monkey god. So you're going to hear from Ram Dass, but remember who is inside of him.
Yes, yes, yes. Good morning.
Last year I was on a late evening train and the station was closed, so I had to buy the ticket on the train. And I had just become 60. So when the conductor came, I said to him, I'd like a senior citizen ticket. And what I felt when I did that was just what I had felt when I was 18 years old. And I had been from Boston where the drinking age was 21, but I went to New York with some friends and the drinking age was 18, and I went into a bar and I said, I'd like a beer, with trepidation that they wouldn't serve me because I was too young. I had the same feeling with the conductor. But he immediately made out the ticket for the senior citizen. I said to him, don't you want to see my ID? And he said, no. And I was shocked. Because until I was 50, I think I saw myself as somewhere between 12 and 14. And then around 50, I started to grow up and I began to consider the fact that I was possibly an adult. So that in earlier years, when I had been in my 30s and a student would come in and say, sir, may I see you? I would take it as a joke. But when I became 60, up until then, I had really treated age as rather uninteresting. And I was busy being spiritual, and spiritual people don't focus on age of the body. So, but I decided when I was 60 to milk it, to see what I could get out of it, to see if there was any work I should do. So instead of, usually I'm traveling during my birthday, so people can't have birthday parties, but this time I told everybody I wanted birthday parties, and I had many birthday parties. And because 60 was a key year, I have studied in the East a great deal, and at 60 you become a sannyas, which in the stages of life, from 0 to 20, the ashramas or stages of life, from 0 to 20 you're a student, from 20 to 40 you're a householder, raising your children, earning money. From 40 to 60 you start to do spiritual studies and pilgrimages and practices. And at 60, you throw over everything, and you are a total, you're totally free. And 60 is such a key point. In this country, it's a little less, more confusing, because you don't know whether you retire at 55 or 60, and Medicare is until 65, and so you don't quite know when the mark is. There's no clear rite of passage as to when you're old. But I really wanted to milk it, and I realized that I got caught in it. And for about 6 months, I was really busy being 60. I looked at my hand and I saw my father's hand. And I thought, there's a 60-year-old hand. You know? Bone and blood vessels and wrinkles and spots. Wow, spots. You know, the Porcelana ad says, it says, they call these spots aging spots. I call them ugly. Isn't that an extraordinary ad? I mean, to create suffering. I mean, the other way of looking is they call these ugly. I call them aging spots. But what I had done was I had internalized at some level, more or less consciously, the social clock of aging of our society, because we are basically a hunting tribe, and what happens to old people in hunting tribes, since hunting tribes have to keep moving, is old people are left behind and they're treated as somewhat irrelevant. And since economic productivity and social roles of achievement are so stressed in this society, in this youth society, I began to feel like it was time for closings rather than openings. I should look at the projects I had left to do. Maybe I should consider retiring from Seva Foundation. Maybe I should do my last book. I mean, I was really climbing into it. Maybe I should take 6 months a year now off. And I started to notice, I travel and I use carry-on baggage because I don't like baggage claim waiting, so I noticed that the corridors to the plane seemed to be getting longer. And I thought, aha, it's happening. And I reacted to it in interesting ways. Part of me was sort of steeping myself in, okay, what's it going to be like to be older? I'll slow down, I'll honor this. And the other part was doing this bizarre behavior where last summer I spent some time helping my colleague build his house with adobe bricks. And I would be in this long line of people, all of whom were about 20 to 30 year old Mexican laborers, and me and my friend, and the bricks weighed about 30 to 40 pounds, and we would toss them up the hill from one to another. And we would work from 7:30 in the morning till 5 at night. at which point they'd go out to dinner and to play, and I would stagger to bed. But I wouldn't give up. I did it. And then I thought, well, my body's out of shape. So I went to Gold's Gym, and I got a trainer. And now Gold's Gym is wonderful because it's where everybody comes with all those kind of really muscle-bound, huge forms, you know, these things that, you know. And they have mirrors all around the sides for these people who admire themselves, but because I'm nearsighted without my glasses, I couldn't see in the mirrors. All I saw were these huge forms going by, and so pretty soon I was starting to walk like this because since I couldn't see myself, I just assumed I was one of them. And but the trainer, as we went through the regimen, at one point I was sitting there deciding whether I would live or die, and she said, "Are you all right?" And I knew she wouldn't be asking that to one of them, so. I remembered my father's little poem, "It's not the crow's feet under your eyes that make you old, or the gray in your hair, I'm told, but when your mind makes a contract your body can't fill, you're over the hill, brother, you're over the hill." But I wasn't ready to give up. So in November, I went with a 33-year-old friend of mine to the South Pacific to do 2 months of boogie boarding. And for those of you that don't know, that it might have passed you by, a boogie board is a plastic board, and you go out in the waves and you ride on the wave. So I found myself in Tahiti and in the Marquesas Islands. And my friend would leap into the surf and rush out to get the waves, and these waves are coming in, and I would be struggling to get through the wave, and I'd get out there, and there were all these, not only weren't they 60 years old, they weren't 50, and they weren't 40, and they weren't even 30. I mean, they were about 15, and only one person gets a wave, it turns out, if you really want to ride the right place. So I was fighting these 15, 20-year-olds. And at one point, I took a wrong turn, and I ended up on this coral reef with the waves pounding down on me and the coral cutting into my legs. And you know how long it takes for coral to heal. And everybody was screaming at me to do something, which I couldn't hear over the waves. And I thought, what am I doing? Is it possible that I could say enough already? I've saved my father's cane for whenever. There's a lovely Chinese story about that, about the old Chinese man who's retired. He's too old to work in the garden, and he's sitting on the porch, and his son is tilling the garden with his son as a wife and family, and the son looks up at the old man and he thinks, you know, he's so old, he just eats food. What good is he? He says, no, it's time for him to be done. So he went out and he made a wooden box, and he put the box on the wheelbarrow, and he rolled the wheelbarrow up to the porch, and he said, "Father, get in." The father got into the box, and the son put a cover on the box and started to wheel the box towards the cliff. And as he got to the edge of the cliff, there was a knocking from inside the box. And he said, "Yes, Father." And the father said, "Well, I understand what you're doing and why you're doing it, son, but might I suggest that you just throw me over and save the box, because your children will probably need it later." But one of the things that's helped me from not getting too trapped in our cultural models is that I do travel a great deal in other cultures. And in other cultures, I'm always surprised at how different the feelings are that are generated around variables. Like in India, when I went there last time, 2 years ago, One of my lovely old friends up in the a village in the mountains said to me, "Ram Dass, you're looking so old." He said, "You're so gray." Now, at first, my reaction to that was my Western cultural reaction of, "Oh God, no, that's terrible." But then when I quieted down, I heard the tone with which he was saying it. He was saying it with great respect and delight. Like I had now become one of the elders of the society. And he was saying, "Wow, you've done it. You've grown old. How great." And what I have found is that after I live in places like Guatemala or Malaysia or Thailand or Burma or Italy or France or Spain or Polynesia, where there are extended families, where everybody has natural roles within the structure, and where old people are part of the families and the old and the young are wise fools together and the whole thing is quite built in, then you come back to where this culture, where we have, quote, an aging problem. And I realize that we are gathered here because of our cultural pathology. That were it not for that, we wouldn't need this so much. Because in many cultures, this was all built in a natural way. And in our zeal to be independent, we have thrown away the baby with the bath a little bit. And we've ended up where we have alienated ourselves across generations instead of embracing ourselves across generations, creating these kinds of supportive communities where the roles of elders are obvious and clear. In our society, of course, where technology moves so fast, we get outdated, so that the question of what wisdom elders have that is useful, I mean, I'm only at WordPerfect 5.0. And I realize now that I already can't talk the language of my friend's 12-year-old son. And I moved from a typewriter to a computer, and I kept saying to myself, old dogs can learn new tricks, old dogs can learn new tricks, old dogs can learn new tricks, and I put it over my computer. But I don't know how many more old tricks I'm gonna learn, and I may just decide to be outdated. But I think that we have to recognize that we are living in a system that has gotten out of balance, in which the zeal for independence and individuality has left us alienated from the structures, not only of family and community, but from nature, from recognizing our identity as part of biotic communities and part of other things, that all of which give an intuitive, innate meaning to aging. And they give you a feeling of the appropriateness of the place. Most of us live in urban areas where we are living almost totally surrounded by the projections of the human mind. And very rarely are we living so close to nature and earth that we are experiencing in our blood and our being the cycles of cold and warm, of leaves falling, of the feelings of nature, of death, of birth, of aging. And it's a harsh reality at one level, and it's the horrible beauty of the wisdom of nature that we often have shielded ourselves from, and in that shielding, we have lost something because we've been afraid to look at the nature of aging and death. Robert Kestenbaum says, "The limitations and distortions of our core vision of what it means to be a person in our culture becomes starkly evident in old age. If to be an old person is to suffer abandonment, disappointment, and humiliation, this is not a geriatric problem. It is the disproof of our whole shaky pudding, technology, science, and all. If our old people are empty, our vision of life is empty." The nature of aging has to do with change, obviously. And the nature of changing phenomena is that they are endlessly fascinating. We get fascinated with that which changes. When it starts to happen to who we think we are, the fascination turns into fear. The first level of change that we have to attend to is the physical nature of change with aging. As I read this list, it'll be very familiar to many of you. Arthritis, neuritis, insomnia, constipation, poor circulation, high blood pressure. I went to the doctor the other day and he said, you have high blood. He said, your blood pressure's high. He said, would you do whatever you do to lower it? I said, what I do to lower it is not visit doctor's offices. That's what I do. It's called the white coat blood pressure. Nervous tension, atrophying muscles, bones breaking easily, motor nerve signals slower, lungs less oxygen, loss of mobility, can't hear as well, can't see as well, run out of steam sooner, days when you feel sick and nauseous, questions about continence. Now, those changes themselves are so fascinating that I can take you to whole societies in the sun in St. Petersburg, for example, where there are hundreds of thousands of people who are endlessly reciting the lists of these changes to each other. Mostly their own fascinate them the most. However, they do listen to each other so that they can give fair hearing, so that they can have time for their own. But you don't say, how are you? And that's real, and it's very real, and it's very painful and very confusing, because the body just doesn't do what it used to do, and it does a lot of things it didn't used to do. And while you can see how real that is for those people, when you put in the places of those people who are the same age, now just put on those benches Einstein, Arthur Rubinstein, Pablo Picasso, Rembrandt, George Bernard Shaw, Monet, Chagall, Bob Hope, Grandma Moses, and Margaret Mead. And you can't imagine them sitting around doing that same thing, can you? So it's clearly not age, is it? It's where the mind grabs hold and which changes it focuses on, right? I mean, just that's a... Now, around that one is so endlessly fascinating, we've developed a great deal of humor around it. Johnny Carson, soon to be former Johnny Carson, says, I know a man who gave up smoking, drinking, sex, and rich food. He was healthy right up to the time he committed suicide. Groucho Marx said, in middle age, you go to bed knowing you'll hoping you'll feel better in the morning. In old age, you go to bed hoping you'll have a morning. Robert Benchley said, I feel fine at 50, except for an occasional heart attack. These identifications are so intense, it's extremely hard to break them. But as you heard, you could feel that it was possible to lift out of them and to see the body as a vehicle. In the East, you see the body as something you have incarnated into, and it's a vehicle that it's like a spacesuit for working on this planet, on this plane of reality. And your spacesuit, I have two cars. One is 19 years old and one's 18 years old. Now, to me, they're new cars because I remember them. But one of them just failed the smog test in California, and it's And I realize now that it's just a car. But to be able to say it's just a body in the same way, because most of us have identified so with the, it's like identifying with your car and somebody says, how do you do, who are you? And you say, I'm a Ford, you know, like I'm an arthritic, you know, like I have gout. How do you do, I have gout, you know? It's the same thing, you're identifying with the vehicle. I mean, it's a charming old vehicle, it's just falling apart, but I can, with a little tender care, I can keep it together for a little while longer. However, when you get to the psychological things that change, it's a whole other ball game. When you work with the psychological changes, because there are a lot of new ones you face that are psychological changes. Some of them just increase and some of them appear that have never appeared before. Let me give you a little list to play with. You handled the physical list well? Try this one. Despair. Depression. Feeling abandoned. Lonely. Worthless. Frustrated. Worrying. Doubting. Vulnerable. Forgetful. Losing self-confidence. Petty. Irritable. Fear of the future. Obsessed with possessions. Meaninglessness. Friendlessness. Fear of being penniless. No one to touch. Loss of psychological power. Worship and fear of doctors. Suspicion. Paranoia. Those all sound pretty real. And they are coming and going and appearing more and more frequently and changing. As your social support system changes, as you may have to leave the home, as you may have to lose friends, as you may have to find that you have less responsibility, as the reward systems you worked for don't work anymore. You try to maintain psychological security by holding on to things as they are. And if you can hear the predicament that everything is things change. My car gets old, my body gets old, that's obvious. The hard one to hear is that thoughts and feelings are things and things change. And that your identification with your thoughts and feelings is another source of the cause of the suffering. What we usually do under those conditions is we work in a therapeutic sense, psychologically, to try to find some psychological model that will allow us to age. And we try to substitute that for the one that is depressed and fearful and frightened. It's a horizontal shift. And there are certain qualities that we look for, we try to cultivate. Martin Buber says, to be old is a glorious thing when one has not unlearned what it means to begin. He's talking about somebody who knew how to begin. He said he was not at all young, but he was old in a young way, knowing how to begin. And most of the social programs that are not for the physical body are for psychological well-being. And they're in supporting education, the elder hostel, travel. If you read the AARP magazine, Maturity, you just see lots of stuff around keeping your psychological mental health good and your physical health good. To continue to do things, to be active, etc. To see aging as a challenge, as a psychological challenge, a challenge that is sufficient to motivate you to grow, but not so extreme so as to induce depression, regression, in other words, not beyond our adaptive capacity. To psychologically study the way in which we are responding.